Okay, all right. I just wanted to make sure I wasn't missing something.
No, you're not.
Meeting of the Senate Finance Committee will come to order. For the record, it is Thursday, February 16th, 2012. And on our agenda today, before we start, I just want to announce that the fourth bill on the agenda, Senate File 1260, is going to be laid over. We are awaiting a fiscal note on that that hasn't come through yet, and we would like to have it before the committee before we take that up. So that's Senate File 1260, Senator Cruz's bill. But we will start with Senate File 1528, which is Senator Carla Nelson's bill. And welcome, Senator Nelson, to our committee.
Good morning, Madam Chair, committee. Thank you for listening to 1528 today, Senate File 1528. Madam Chair, I imagine you're mostly interested in the finance piece, but maybe I could just tell you two sentences about what the bill is about.
That's correct. Senator Nelson, we always like to have a little background because we vote the whole bill out of here.
Okay, wonderful. This is the digital learning bill. It's a 21st century tools for 21st century teachers. It encourages digital learning in our classrooms. It has the ability to transform education. It has the ability to help teachers reach all students at all levels, at all times. This bill does a few things. One, it asks the Online Learning Council to catalog the digital resources that have already been aligned to our standards, and then it adds some student performance measures to that and some continuous evaluation measures to that. It also strongly encourages that all students take at least one online course prior to graduating from high school. And it specifies that compensatory money can be used for online learning. And it calls for a study of our rules and regs regarding education to just determine how do they impact digital learning. Is it helping digital learning, or do we have things in law from maybe a long time ago that are impeding digital learning? So that's kind of the gist of the bill. And if you think about how the digital things have revolutionized so many other areas of our lives, digital learning can do the same thing in education. So that's the gist of the bill, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. And could we take a look at the fiscal note part of it? Perhaps we can have our fiscal analyst just run through that quickly.
Sure. Madam Chair, members, the Department of Education has prepared a fiscal note on Senate File 1528 indicating that the department anticipates the need of an additional FTE in the text says fiscal year 12, but it's actually fiscal year 13 for an education specialist to the Online Learning Advisory Council. And that much of that work would occur in that 1 year, and that on an ongoing basis, the staffing needs would drop to a quarter FTE in the tails. And the front table in the fiscal note indicates the cost of that FTE and the tails impact. So $104,000 cost in 2013 from the general fund, with $26,000 as the ongoing cost of the lower level of effort anticipated after full implementation.
Senator Nelson, is someone from the department here who would like to be available for questions?
Madam Chair, I'll let the department speak first. That's okay.
Good morning. Madam Chair, members, my name is Darren Cordy. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Education. Our concern surrounding this bill is solely with the fiscal note. We definitely are dedicated to providing better service and support to online schools and their students and parents. However, after sustaining the budget cut that we took last year and in previous years, our staffing levels are thin, and with our limited resources, we'd be afraid that we'd be stretched even thinner by passing this bill without a funding source along with it.
Mr. Cordy, do you currently have someone online who works online? Do you have someone on staff that works with online programming at the current time? Do you have several people or any specialists?
We have one person, Madam Chair. We have one person who currently works on online issues, and she's not dedicated to that to online services only for full-time. We are in the process of hiring a director of online education. They've been interviewing for the position this week.
Mr. Cordy, how often, or maybe Senator Nelson, how often will this online advisory council be meeting?
Madam Chair, the online learning advisory council is tasked with doing this, and Minnesota Department of Ed is just tasked with providing support. So the council can determine how long they need to meet or how often they need to meet and how much they need to rely on the Minnesota Department of Ed.
But Madam Chair?
Senator Olson.
That's an existing council. It's not new. It's not being created by this bill. So this has been ongoing in terms of serving the needs of that council. With one person, or was it one part-time person that's on?
Senator Nelson.
Is John Voss here from the Online Learning Council? Maybe he could answer that best.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome.
I'm John Voss. I'm the chair of the Minnesota Online Learning Council. And I believe the question was whether or not there is a department person supporting it now.
That's correct.
There is a position at the Department of Education for an online learning coordinator that is in the process of being filled, as I understand. It has been open for a couple of years at least. So there is just that one position.
So we are hiring somebody already, and so that must be available in the budget, that funding for that staff person. Is that right, Mr. Cordy?
Madam Chair, yes, there is funding for this online coordinator. However, their sole purpose in that position would not be to only help advise, work with the advisory council. They would also be assisting in approving and reviewing new applications for online schools, as well as dealing with revisions to those applications, which we've rejected. According to the fiscal note, this new person, their main job would be to assist the council in developing the course catalog, as well as the report and the other things that were mentioned in the fiscal note.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, we had this discussion in committee, but now it seems that there is no one else. You were saying that you do have a staff person in existence that does work with online. I didn't catch whether it was full-time or part-time, but now you're hiring somebody who will be able to supervise this unit of one employee and do some, additional work as well. And I think it seemed to me that the task at hand is not that overburdening. If the work as to who is going to do that work, and whether this should have a priority, when you lay out tasks that you do, some of them have a priority as to whether there's another person needed for this, and that was why we did eliminate the funding that was in the original bill. Felt that it was not necessary.
That there was staffing already coming online.
Partly that. There, and I did ask for a job description. I don't know that I had received it. You've given a partial one of that in your testimony today, Mr. Cordy. But it seems that while this hasn't taken a large role within the department, that there's some recognition that there's a need for this, whether it's going to be oversight or whether it's going to be focused on assisting schools, which is what this development of this catalog is all about, I wanted to have some clarity in terms of what that job description role is. This, as Senator Nelson has said, this is this is the future, and frankly, it's kind of almost passing us by, in terms of trying to keep up with the changes that are affecting the rest of life, And the students are, in many cases, way ahead of the rest of us in terms of their use of technology, and how to in fact put that to work in for good learning is what is important. And that they identify all of the things that are happening in terms of developing of software for good instruction online or by digital learning that do match with our standards. And that would be, it seems to me, a rather key role if you're going to, whether you're going to be overseeing what's happening in both online schools within districts or charter schools or anything else, that's a key tool in doing it. And why somehow that would be outside of the jurisdiction of the new coordinator, I have a hard time seeing. So.
Senator Newman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe you or maybe Senator Olson could help me. Line 1.23, there's a Minnesota Learning Commons. Can you tell me, you know, what is that or who is it? And is that a group or an organization that receives any kind of funding from the state of Minnesota?
Maybe Mr. Voss would be able to answer that.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Newman. The Minnesota Learning Commons has been a partnership among the University of Minnesota, the Minnesota State Colleges and Universities, and the Department of Education. There is a small amount of funding that the university systems have put towards it. The Department of Ed has participated. A number of us have volunteered as K-12 members to work with them on pulling together as many resources as are available under that umbrella. And so the platform is there, and I think the expertise exists there. The resources and the staffing would be difficult to support this magnitude of work with what's existing there now. And so I think we'd be excited, and the Learning Commons is developed primarily for this kind of attention to give to this particular project, but staffing and resources are always a bit of an issue when we're going to have something rather specific that is going to be expected to be ready in September or later. So I don't know if we've considered that timeline or not.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson, would it help the department, do you believe, if the expectation for the timeline was extended a little bit so that the two staff people that will be in the department might have a little more flexibility? Is there a deadline? There's not a deadline in here, but it's just an expectation that the council has set up?
Actually, there is a timeline as far as when the two studies should be presented. So, Madam Chair, I believe Senator Magnus has an amendment to that timeline effect.
I do.
Senator Magnus.
Madam Chair, I would offer at this time the A5 amendment.
If you would like to explain the amendment, Senator Magnus.
Madam Chair and members, page one, line 22, we would start the timeline on June 30th, 2013. And then on page 3, line 29, the last words of the bill, delete January 11 and insert June 30.
Thank you. Are there any questions about the amendment? If not, Senator Carlson, Senator Nelson,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Do you have any comments? Or
I'll just make a few comments. I believe that certainly the bill in the shape that it is, without the amendment, and it did pass out of the Education Committee on a unanimous voice vote, I do think that it is something that the department can handle, as did the committee. However, if this finance committee feels more comfortable allowing that new online hire to have a few months into the job before we ask for their support of the Online Learning Council, I'm fine with this amendment if that provides more comfort for this committee.
Okay. Senator Higgins?
Madam Chair, I'm sorry I'm late. I'm late to this discussion, but the point of having a council report to committees of the legislature in June is a little weird, as the amendment has.
Senator Nelson?
I think we just addressed that. It was to allow the new hire that the Minnesota Department of Ed is bringing on board not be as rushed, give them more time. The second thing is you'll notice that time frame corresponds with the time frame for the Online Learning Advisory Council, which is already in statute. So the amendment and the Online Learning Advisory timeline sync up. And it provides
Chair,
more flexibility.
Senator Nelson, the point is we're not here. You can send us a nice report, but why? We're not here. We've been gone for 2 months at that point. So the point of having a report come to us on June 30th of 2013 is, I mean, why? You may as well give them another to December 15th. At least we'll be back soon to see it.
Senator Higgins, though, the council actually expires on June 30th, 2013. They're to sunset at that point. So that would be the end of their tenure as well. So we're giving them until they're ready to sunset to complete their work and submit the report.
So Madam Chair, this isn't really a council. This is a task force. This is not an ongoing council. This is just a group of people who are making a report, and then they're done.
Senator Nelson.
I'll let Mr. Voss speak to that, but this is the Online Learning Advisory Council, which is already in place. But as you might recall, we passed the Sunset Commission, which will be looking at commissions at the date that they sunset. So that piece is already in law, and I'll let Mr. Voss take more questions on that.
Mr. Voss.
Thank you. The council's expiration date is June of 2013. There was a previous iteration of this group that ended in 2008, I believe, and then it was reconstituted in 2010, partly because there's so many issues coming up that need some attention. And so if the end date would be June 30th of 2013, I imagine we would have something ready sooner than that, especially if there is anything that needs to be brought to the legislature before that time.
And Senator Nelson, wouldn't some of the work done in the study be valuable to the department without us needing to even see it? I mean, there's other reasons to do it besides giving a report to the legislature.
Oh, absolutely. The report to the legislature is just for the piece on the study about rules and regs, if there's any statutes that need change. But that's a very small piece of it.
Great, thank you.
The rest of it would be very helpful to the Department of Ed.
Okay. So on the amendment, on Senator Magnus' A5 amendment, if there's no further discussion, all in favor of the A5 amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The amendment is adopted. And on the bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Cohen.
Just a couple things. First of all, in response to Senator Higgins, why do you think we'd be gone by June 30th?
Well, I'm going to be gone by June 30th of 2013.
But I appreciate your optimism.
Thanks.
And Madam Chair, my other question is, I noticed that this bill requires the employment of one FTE for the course of the council, and subsequent to that, a quarter of an FTE annually. I thought we were about cutting government and not adding to government, but that's okay. I just wanted to...
Well, Senator Cohen, we were just discussing that they are hiring a full-time FTE for online learning now. They already have someone on staff for that, and we are about to say that those two people are sufficient to handle this job.
No, Madam Chair, I understand that, and I note in the fiscal note that it says that the ongoing maintenance with the expiration of the council will require a 0.25 FTE annually. My comment's a general comment. I thought what I heard last year's session was we needed to cut government and not hire more people or whatever, and we're hiring more people. And this just suggests that there are times when that might be appropriate. And it also suggests that it's not one size fits all, obviously. Just wanted to point that out.
Thank you, Senator Cohen. The online edition was already in the process of being developed in response to some other issues involving online licensure. And so we understand it was coming.
And Madam Chair, I understand that perfectly, that the council was there. I mean, what we heard in last year's session ad nauseum was that the agencies could absorb a lot of these kinds of efforts within their present complement, that state government was too big, we couldn't raise revenue to add to state government or whatever. And I'm just suggesting this is a small piece, but this is exactly how it happens, that you start increasing the cost of state government. And I'm not saying that's necessarily a bad thing, but that is just contrary to the rhetoric I heard throughout last year's session.
What is your adding to staff?
Senator Cohen, we aren't going to fund this. They are going to absorb it into their budget. So that's what it's here for us to determine if that's feasible or not. And so if there's no other discussion on Senate File 1528, or Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Olson, just I hope a quick question. I want to, on page 3 of the bill, section 3, do we do a lot of this in the education statutes where we make statements about encouraging students to do one thing? Is this I'm just a little, I guess, unfamiliar with this kind of construction in our statutes and just wanted to understand more why we're doing that.
Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, Senator Hahn. I've seen this a number of times. The idea is to strongly encourage what the legislature believes is valuable. However, at the same time, we don't want to mandate. And so we're kind of not wanting to mandate to our school districts, but we definitely want to strongly encourage them to take a look at whatever it is. In this case, it's encouraging an online learning course.
And Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, so this doesn't have any, there's no effect per se. Nobody would be reprimanded if they didn't strongly encourage, or there'd be no penalty if that didn't happen, or no way to judge whether or not that's going on. That's not the intent. It's just a sort of a statement. Is that?
Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, Senator Hand, thank you for making that so very clear. That's exactly correct. We're just encouraging, no mandate.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, all in favor of Senate File 1528, moved by Senator Magnus, and is recommended to pass to the floor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be sent to the floor.
Thank you,
Senator
Chair.
Nelson.
Good luck, Mike.
Our next bill on the agenda is Senator Perry's bill, Senate File 1140. Senator Perry.
Good morning. This bill, Senate File 1140, is a bill that clarifies and will assist law enforcement and the court by clarifying the statute concerning the placement of license plates. And that's pretty much what the bill does. It clarifies how and where a vehicle's front and rear license plate must be displayed and mounted on a vehicle. Both plates must be mounted either on the bumpers or on another exterior location designed to hold a license plate. The fiscal note comes in with a savings of $14,000, and where that comes from is as they take a look at this, by clarifying this for the judicial branch, it will save an estimated 0.04 FTEs. normal annual cost of a judge unit is about $351,000 a year, which they include salary, fringe benefits, and operating costs. So they say that this will save in time in the courts, as people will, now that they know, will be probably more inclined just to pay the fine because there's just been some it just hasn't been clear to the judges on where the plight should be.
Are there any questions about Senate File 1140? It does provide a cost savings to the budget. If not, we'd like to see these types of bills, Senator Perry. If there's no other discussion, Senator Perry moves that Senate File 1140 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be sent to the floor. Thank you, Senator Perry. Next, we have Senator Tomasoni's bill. This also deals with license plates, but in a little different way. It's Senate File 393.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. Committee members and Madam Chair, this bill was passed out of here last session, was up on the Senate floor. So I don't know how much explanation you want other than to tell you that it's a bill to give a retired firefighter's a license plate. And, Madam Chair, I have to put an amendment on it because the dates have changed now since it's a year old. And there's an A3 amendment that has a little bit of change in the verbiage also, but has pretty much the same effect. And I need to put that on the bill to get it in the correct shape if it would please the committee.
And Chair, I'll offer the A3 amendment.
Senator Higgins offers the A3 amendment. It changes the dates to bring it up to date from the bill that was passed last year. Is there any question?
Dates on this bill.
And Madam Chair, I probably should point out also that it adds in the bill that was passed last year, the approval came from the fire chief or administrative officer. This one adds the fire chief and the administrative officer, and with the approval of the board with jurisdiction. So that's what the amendment does, and everybody that's seen this amendment is okay with it. And so I think it just adds a little bit of, I don't know what happens in fire departments that there has to be so many people approving a license plate, but apparently some things happen here or there. So at any rate, nobody's objecting to it, I don't think.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't see in this amendment to the amendment, I don't see sheriffs on here. Is there any reason why there's, I think there's retired sheriffs?
Very good reason.
Or retired farmers, or retired farmers or anything like that. Just kidding. Thank
you. Mr. Chair, Madam Chair.
Senator Stump.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni. Is the cost is a reflection of two things. One, the number of plates that are made, and two, the actual cost of the manufacturing. We used to always have a bill for, a new plate for this group or a new plate for that group. I always thought that the actual cost was higher than $10, or at least I suppose it varies according to how many are needed.
Madam Chair and Senator Stump, my understanding is that there's a couple of things going on, that they have better technology now and make the plates. And I think there's a reserve account this comes out of. And so it doesn't cost anything at all. And Madam Chair and members, this is supported by the fire chiefs and by the state fire departments association. So.
Senator Tomasoni, it was pointed out that we do not have the second engrossment, so the amendment isn't lining up, and our pages just run off to print us the second engrossment. So I don't know if we want to wait. Maybe you could talk a little more about your bill.
Oh, do we really have
the
to?
The amendment is on the table.
I got a question. Is the money coming from IRRRB?
Well, I was going to tell you some range stories if you want to know about the wall that goes around Chisholm or anything like that. Madam Chair, I can add to this that one of the reasons that this bill is before us is there is a firefighter's plate, but when the firefighters retire, then they have to get rid of their firefighter's plate, and so some of my firefighters seem to think it was appropriate that they should be allowed to continue to have a firefighter's plate, but just signify that they are retired as opposed to being an active firefighter, because when you're an active firefighter and you have a firefighter's plate, you're allowed to drive into the scene of fires and assist with the extinguishing of the fire. And so the retired firefighter's plate would actually distinguish them from an active firefighter and not allow them to go into the fire scene because they're not actively doing anything now. So, and the other thing about it is that they have had 10 years of firefighting experience in order to qualify for this retired firefighter's plate also. And everybody seems to be very happy with that caveat in the bill.
I see, Senator Tomasoni, that they're assuming that there will be almost 12,000 plates sold in the first year and then 2,100 plates in subsequent years. Do you have any idea how many firefighter plates are currently out there?
We have the department here who can probably tell you that, if they, because I don't pay attention when I'm driving down what the license plates look like.
You don't pay attention.
Good morning, Ms. McCormick. Just about how many plates we currently have with firefighters, and then do they purchase those themselves, or are they given that special plate for being a member of a fire department?
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For the record, Pat McCormick, the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services with the Department of Public Safety. Unfortunately, I don't have the number of currently of firefighters. I can get that number for the committee. I did want to mention, though, that when we talk about the plate fee at being $10, one of the main reasons that the costs are such is because we're going to be using the same plate design that the current firefighters have. So the only thing would be changing would be the lettering. And we have now gone to a digital plate design system, which really saves us a lot of time and money. And we work with MinCor, who obviously produces the plates with us, and we have a contract with them. But I don't have the number of current, but this was, I think this was a discussion we had with the fire marshal in talking about what we thought would be the best estimate for the retired firefighter plates that we think would be sold.
And Ms. McCormick, do current firemen get a plate for like a single vehicle because they're a member of a fire department, or do they buy those separately?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure of that part of it. I know that they have to have authorization. We have to see authorization that they are a firefighter, and that's what Senator Tomasoni's language is talking about in terms of the retired firefighters as well. We have to ensure that they are a designation that they meet the requirements in the statutes. In terms of the payment, I think they pay for it themselves, but I'm not positive because we're talking about on their personal vehicles, but I can't say for sure, but that has always been my understanding.
Okay, thank you. Senator Hand.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Ms. McCormick, as long as we're waiting for a couple of minutes, taking advantage of your being here, just out of curiosity, my own, because I don't serve on these committees that may hear these things, but how many different special license plates does Minnesota issue?
McCormick?
I'll have to look that up. I don't have that information with me. I was going to say that I thought it was in the high 60s. 68. It might be 69.
Okay. And Madam Chair and Senator Ms. McCormick, do you know how many residents or owners of vehicles have special plates versus the normal plates? I mean, are we getting to the point where more people have special plates than normal plates? Or I'm just curious. I don't know.
Ms. McCormick?
Madam Chair and Senator Han, I don't know that specifically, but I would say no, we're not there yet. So
maybe it's a goal we can shoot for.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson?
Well, Madam Chair, I think there was a time when it was much more difficult to get one of these started because there was a cost. Mm-hmm. And how that was going to be generated, the initial cost to get it up and running and, you know, the tool and die, the mold, the stamp, the whole business to and the material they're made of was more expensive. But once this digital approach came, I mean, it was really fairly easy to modify and have some rather beautiful, you know, artwork on these plates without really adding any great cost, and I think that's multiplied it. But Senator Stumpf, he just had an idea when we were talking here. I think maybe the one thing that's missing on these plates, and so I mean, what difference does it make whether they all look alike or not, or we've all got unique plates? The main purpose for the plates, I think, is for the law enforcement and other kinds of things. Senator Stumpf, why don't you just toss out here, get people thinking about it anyway.
Senator Stumpf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually had two ideas, one probably not so good. That was to have a special plate for legislators, but then I...
Oh. He didn't tell me that.
I heard that our approval rating was so low that it probably a bad idea. The thought that I you know is I think would be a good idea is that if we put a UPC code on the bottom of the plate, and I often thought that you know you have a lot of stolen vehicles out there and a lot of risk that law enforcement takes when they are you know working. And one night I went riding around with the Minneapolis Police Department, and I don't think I'd do what they do, you know, and get into those situations. If you had a UPC code that was on the plate that you could scan from the patrol's vehicle, that would give them the information as to whether it's a stolen vehicle or whether it's a, you know, something that would alert them ahead of time, I think it would be a whole lot better and easier. Now, I don't know. The technology is available, but I'm sure that there's probably other factors that would have to be considered. But it would advance, I think, the safety for our law enforcement people.
Well, Madam Chair.
Senator Langseth.
Special place for legislators. I knew a very colorful legislator quite a long time ago that got a special license plate that said senator on it. And he always drove very nice luxury cars. Well, last time he got elected, he was complaining that he lost his home precinct. And I said, if I drove around my township with a car like yours with senator on it, I'd lose my, my home precinct, too. There's a little danger in that.
Senator Thomas.
Madam Chair, Senator Stumpf, I had a personal experience just recently in that I got stopped.
Imagine that.
Well, I don't think I was doing anything wrong. But anyway, it was a little Canada policeman, and he was very nice, and he handed me my driver's license back, and he said, I'm just on this service road because lots of people walk on this service road, and we want to make sure people are careful. And he said, so slow down, Senator. And I looked at him, and I said, now, how did you know that? He said, oh, Wikipedia. You guys are all on Wikipedia. I just looked it up just now. We don't need a barcode.
Well, Ms. McCormick, on the barcode issue, I suppose you could almost have it put on with your tab or something,
sure.
So that they didn't have to make each plate individualized, which would be very expensive. But if you could have a sticker or something, Ms. McCormick.
Madam Chair, we do have barcodes on the stickers, and that's partially for inventory purposes for us because obviously those stickers are worth tax dollars, and so it's for inventory purposes. And in some states, they have, you know, license plate readers that are used so that they can, the law enforcement are able to read it because of the sticker. But our purpose is mainly for inventory, to be able to track those stickers, because we have them at all of our deputy registrar offices, in addition to at our office, to make sure that we have proper inventory control because of the costs associated with them.
Well, Senator Stumpf wasn't so far off. Senator Ingefertson had his hand up.
Thank you. As Senator Cohen so always reminds us about being on the record, it sure is nice to hear that there's two senators that are willing to say that they've been spending time in a squad car lately. I'm not going to ask Leroy what. Well, there's a front seat or the back seat you were in, but
that was the back seat. No, that's what we didn't need to hear. But just real quickly with the firemen, as a young rookie, living only two blocks from the fire department myself, I often thought about joining the volunteer. And I think, what do we got, two or three, maybe just a handful of full-time fire departments in the state of Minnesota that actually get paid. And when the siren went off, and I'd look at my watch at 1, 2 o'clock in the morning when I was coming home from my other job, and it was 20 below, I said, boy, I'm so glad I never did that. I'm so glad I never joined the fire department. They put a lot of time and effort into it. They take it very serious. They really donate a lot to their community, and this is certainly one good way to recognize them. So it's a good bill.
And they do save a lot of lives.
Senator Higgins and then Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, I actually have a question on the amendment.
Yeah, we should get back to that. And since we have the engrossment here, we can engross it now.
Okay. The first two lines of the amendment, I've tried to go back and figure out what I'm actually, or, you know, what we're actually doing. And it looks like if a retired member of the fire department wants one of these license plates, they have to have a letter from the fire chief and the administrative officer of the local government unit with the approval of the board with jurisdiction over the fire department, which seems to be a little more cumbersome than we often try to do things. So you have the letter from the chief, then you have a letter from, I don't know, what, the city coordinator or the
administrator
mayor or the whatever?
The city manager.
City manager.
Or whatever operates their unit.
And then approval of the board over the fire department. In Minneapolis, I don't think we have a board over the fire department. We have a
city council
or a chief. Maybe this makes more sense in the volunteer firefighter cities, that there's a way to do this. But I don't know how this would work.
I know Senator Tomasoni said that it was complicated, but this is what had been requested, correct, Senator Tomasoni?
Madam Chair and Senator Higgins, it was my understanding this is a Peace in the Valley amendment, but I think Mr. Straczynski can explain it if you would like to hear an explanation of why.
Mr. Straczynski.
Good morning, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, I'm Bill Straczynski, and I represent the Minnesota Fire Chiefs Association, the fire departments, fire marshals, arson investigators, and everything else that's good and decent, right, and just, I guess. This is last year, the amendment, the bill, as you read it, the second engrossment was a version that passed out of committee. It was an amendment put on by Senator Howe that said it could be the fire chief could make this determination, or it could be a township officer or a member of the council or whatever. And we were concerned on behalf of fire service that we wanted to make sure that the people who got retired plates were in good standing. They, you know, there was not other kinds of issues, so that we wanted to be involved in a decision. The fire chief wants to be involved in a decision. And this is language. I sat down with Senator Howe in his office the other night and came up with this kind of conclusion. It seems to work for everybody. It certainly works for us. And he was comfortable with that language. I mean, that was his suggestion, so we, at the end of the day, so that's this the language you have before you today, and the amendment is the language we agreed to. And it works for us. That way, the fire chief certainly is involved in a decision.
Any other questions?
there was concerns about having just the fire chief being involved in the decision because, you know, local politics and, so and all those kinds of things that could prevail. So no, this works well.
Madam Chair, Senator Higgins, if I can repeat your question to Mr. Straczynski, it seems like there's a real lot of people that need to approve this.
Yeah.
And can we tone that down a little bit is what you're thinking, I think, right?
Madam Chair and Senator Tomasoni, yeah, it just seems to be kind of overkill that whatever the administrative officer of the local government unit is and the approval of the board with jurisdiction over the fire department. Would a city council, would the Minneapolis City Council have to take actual council action to give approval for a firefighter to have one of these? That's what it seems to say.
Mr. Straczynski.
Madam Chair, we were comfortable with just the fire chief making the recommendation. This committee evidently last year thought that there was, you'd wanted other people involved in the decision.
And I don't disagree with that, Madam Chair. But I think we've got like three layers now. So you went from one to three.
I'm wondering.
Senator Tomasoni, I don't know if you would want to consider, because if we need the city and manager, the city administrator, and the city council, that might be more than we need. But if there's been a pre-agreement, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Madam Chair, to that point, it doesn't say and, it says or, so we could stop at the chief.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, if you look at the amendment, it's changing that. It's changing it to and.
Both of them?
Yeah. Madam Chair, I'm wondering if we need line 2.25.
It says and.
If we get board with jurisdiction over the fire department, I wonder if we can just take those words out as well as with the approval of the in the amendment. So, in other words, it would say, has a letter from the fire chief and administrative officer of the local unit of government affirming that the applicant is a retired firefighter. That way we take that board out of there.
So, Senator Tomasoni, would that amend the amendment?
That would amend the amendment, yes.
Madam Chair, it would delete line 3 of the amendment.
Delete line 3 of the amendment. And that would be all we would be doing?
No. First, we'd have to do that, I think. And then we would have to delete or board with jurisdiction over the fire department on line 225 of the bill.
I didn't hear that.
Would you repeat that, Senator Tomasoni?
on line 225, after we delete line 1.3 of the amendment, then on line 225, I think if we delete or board with jurisdiction over the fire department, and I think we get to what Senator Higgins is thinking.
Madam Chair, I'll incorporate that in the A3 amendment. So, recapping, delete line 3 of the amendment and delete on 2.25 of the second engrossment, everything before the word affirming.
Okay. Does everyone understand that? Is there any other discussion, Senator Olson?
I'm still trying to read the language of how this with the approval of. We're not taking that out, are you?
That line is deleted.
It'll say this now. It'll on line 224, it'll say, has a letter from the fire chief and administrative officer of the local government unit affirming that the applicant is a retired firefighter who served 10 years or more and separated in good standing.
So we're deleting line 1.3 of the amendment?
Yes.
Yes. And in essence, if a city wanted to, they could require that before the administrator gave the letter that the board would have to approve it.
Sure.
But I don't think most of them would choose to do that. So I think we'd be okay in that. Any other questions about the A3 amendment? And Senator Higgins?
I'll move the amendment as we have modified it.
The A3 amendment as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, nay. The amendment is adopted. And then to the bill.
Senator, I just wanted to insert, I know we got off from the storytelling, but it just jogged my memory. The city of Minnetrista, where I live, at one point had a mayor who stole the license tabs that were put on his car. And a sharp-eyed law enforcement officer who was used to patrolling and knew which car is sat where out in this neighborhood. He hadn't seen this one for a while and happened to check the tabs and discovered the tabs belonged to somebody else. So it is kind of interesting, you know, that you, the fine print on a tab to think that you could track that down. Needless to say, he soon was no longer our mayor. And but I just thought that was a little bit of interest on the part of some good law enforcement. But, I can't even imagine somehow somebody getting, he'd stolen apparently from a car in the university parking, the university student parking lot. But anyway, that's, to get that peeled off and be able to reuse it, I think, is kind of a major endeavor.
It probably took some super glue, because I think once you'd peel it off, it they wouldn't stick very easily again. But anyway, on the bill, Senator Higgins moves that Senate File 393 be recommended to pass as amended. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill will be sent to the floor.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
If anyone has come in late, I just want to remind them that we are not going to hear Senate File 1260 today as we await a fiscal note on that. And so we will be going to Senate File 1072, Senator Gimsey's bill.
Thank you.
Senator Gimsey, welcome to our committee.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and members. Appreciate the opportunity to present the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill, Senate File 1072. And last year we brought this bill through this committee to talk about some of the provisions in there that had a fiscal impact. What we did was bring the bill back to transportation this year, made some revisions in the bill, and the new fiscal note indicates some of the impacts of those changes. And I'll have Ms. Boyd go through those that had a fiscal impact.
Ms. Boyd.
Madam Chair and committee members, you should be receiving a one-page grid that looks like this. Just to simplify the lengthy fiscal note, we can go through the few sections that have fiscal impact in the bill. And we'll, I suppose we'll start with expenditures. Section 37 and also 39, actually, of the bill deal with allowing online driver education. Through the Department of Public Safety, there will be provided certificates to online educators, online driver educators. The cost of these will be paid back by the providers. So if you'll see, there's a $32,000 cost from the Special Revenue Fund in the top line, and then below in the revenues on the second line, that's paid back in the same year by the providers. And broken down, that's $30,000 for rulemaking related to this and $2,000 for the actual cost of the certificates and mailing. The next is an overweight motor vehicle registration surcharge. This is repealing the requirement for motor vehicles to re-register and pay an additional registration tax when they operate at excessive gross weights, and instead apply a surcharge to the special overweight permit fee. So this responsibility would be shifted from DPS to MnDOT. This $30,000 expenditure from the Trunk Highway Fund is a small change to their permitting system to allow for that. And then you'll look below in the revenue section, the third line, is a loss of revenue to the Special Revenue Fund at DPS for the loss of the filing fee on relating to these. Again, in the expenditures, sections 44 and 52 deal with changes to the major highway projects report required by MnDOT. It just changes certain parameters of the report, including more projects and incorporating the existing Trunk Highway Expenditures Report into that greater report. And these are changes that would be staff time and internal audits of their management systems. The bill does direct MnDOT to absorb these costs, which is why this is shown in as an absorption on the next line.
Madam Chair.
Senator Magnus.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Gimsey, could you describe that a little more in Section 44 and why we're reducing the the triggers that the amounts that trigger the reports and what we're trying to accomplish here. It's quite a bit of money, and I know it's coming out of the Trunk Highway Fund, so I just want to get a little better idea, Senator, on what's going on with this.
Senator Gimsey.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Magnus, what we are trying to do is to add additional transparency in the reporting and lower the threshold on the size of the projects that are being reported on. Yeah. We also included any major changes to those projects so that we can better understand when a project goes over budget, why it's going over budget. In a lot of cases, some of the projects are small enough that they aren't triggered by the current language, but the projects go over by a couple of $100,000, $500,000, and we just want to have a better understanding of why those projects are going over and better transparency in that. So okay. We think it's an important tool to monitor those types of projects.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. White?
Madam Chair, continuing... the last line on the expenditure section is it's tied to a revenue piece on the bottom of the revenue section as well. It's modifying child passenger restraint state law, and this puts the state back in compliance with federal law to receive Section 2011 funds under Safety Lou. And we received these funds in 2010, and it was about $378,000. The Title III bus changes put us out of compliance with that law, apparently, and changing this will put us back in an anticipated receipts starting in fiscal year 13 of this federal money again. This is pass-through money, which is why it's in expenditures and revenues. It's a pass-through money to local government for child safety support activities.
Ms. Boyd, when does this money arrive from the federal government?
That I'm not sure about. We can ask the department if...
I'm thinking we might have just seen it in the October grants from the federal government.
Madam Chair,
she's coming on.
I'm not sure that you would have seen it this past October because we've been out of compliance with federal rules that would allow us to receive that, but typically.
Okay. Okay. Would you introduce yourself and maybe you have an explanation for us?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Donna Berger. I'm the Director of the Office of Traffic Safety with the Department of Public Safety. And Senator Gimsey is correct. We did not receive that money last October. I'm not certain the exact month that we receive it, but it would typically be in the fall that we would receive this money if we came back in compliance.
Ms. Berger, what put us out of compliance?
Well, what put us out of compliance was... In 2010, there was a change in the bill in the wording that for school bus exemptions, and the federal government, based on their interpretation, felt that the language was too broad. So changing the language back to the way it is in the bill now will put us in compliance, but it doesn't change anything as far as who is exempt from the booster seat bill. It's just that's the language that the federal government said would put us in compliance. They just were not comfortable with the wording of the school bus exemption the way it was.
So, Ms. Berger, do we get to backfill that, or has a year's worth of revenue been lost?
Madam Chair, unfortunately, that money is lost. We do not get to backfill that.
Okay. Senator Higgins?
So in a matter of practicality, what does that mean for the operators of the school buses or these Type 3, whatever those things are? Do they have to have seat belts now for the kids? Do they have to have booster seats? Is there a practical operational difference?
Ms. Berger?
Madam Chair and Senator, no, there is not. It's just that the clarification now says that any school bus under the 10,000-pound which is typically is the Type 3 is the vans, and so it does not change it. It's just that because of the language of the school bus itself in there, that confused people. It's now the gross vehicle weight that makes the difference. So that would not change the larger school buses. That they would not, that requirement would not change.
So, Madam Chair, the little
Senator
school
Higgins?
Buses, would they be small enough so that they would be required to have seatbelts? That it's still, they would still be large enough that they would.
Ms. Berger?
Madam Chair and Senator, that's correct. If it's a school bus that has the compartmentalization, then that's still.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, I'm sorry, Madam Chair. It's a little difficult to explain. But it's the gross vehicle weight, so that's typically the vans, under 10,000-pound gross vehicle weight. That's typically the vans that have the seatbelts. So it's any vehicle that currently has seatbelts installed, then they would be required. That's the way it always has been, and it's the same. They would be required to have the child passenger safety seats. Any school bus, which typically those small school buses are above the 10,000-pound gross vehicle weight, those are compartmentalized, meaning, and they do not have safe seat belts in them, so they would not be required. So it doesn't change any of the requirements. It just clarifies the language for the federal government to make, so they're comfortable with the language.
And then we get the grant.
Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, thank you. Ms. White, if you'd like to continue.
Madam Chair, so moving on to the few sections in the revenue part of the grid that we haven't touched on, Section 51 deals with an issue with Painesville Airport and a payback to the Department of Transportation, an agreement that may be made with the department on payback of those funds. That payback is really due immediately, but this would be an agreement to have it paid back in 2015. So the revenue loss you see here will be a loss of interest income on that fund in the state airports fund. There are small amounts in 13 and 14, but they didn't even reach $500. So total interest income after the 3 years would be about $2,500. And then midway down, sections 6 through 8 and 53 deals with changes to the disposal of revenues for the high occupancy toll lanes. These are changes to the law. Currently, one half of excess revenue after accounting for operations would go to Met Council. So taking away that requirement and leaving all of the net revenue with MnDOT for costs related to operating the MnPass would be a change from Met Council Special Revenue Fund to MnDOT Special Revenue Fund. And you can see that's about $350,000 to $360,000 a year going out.
So, Ms. Boyd, you said that it's one half of the excess after the costs of operating.
Right.
So it's about $700,000 is all the excess is, and this is half of it, $357,000. So all that money collected, it would never, when you think about that, we would never be able to pay for the construction of the lanes with the money we collect. We only are paying for the operations, for the collections of the money, with only this much of a surplus. Is that and this is for not just 394, but it would be now for 35 also. We have several areas where we have the MnPass lanes now.
That is true. Currently, MnPass on 394 and 35W are handled separately. This would be merging them into dealing with them the same in terms of what percentage goes to where and in one account in the special revenue fund. And as answer to your first question, I believe Ms. Berezovsky can answer that.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Sorry, you were saying it's not true, what she was saying.
I'm sorry. Madam Chair and members, I think Ms. Boyd answered the question. Was there an additional question? I didn't.
No, I was just wondering. We obviously don't pay for constructing those lanes out of the money we get from users of the lanes.
That's right.
And the users of the lanes, after the cost of collecting the money is taken out, we have only collected around $700,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And that is going half to the Met Council, and then do they use that for transit projects, or where does it go?
Madam Chair, the current statute does provide that half of the excess over the operating expenses does go to the Met Council for transit within the corridor. Now, I believe the 35W lane, I don't know how much the number that we're looking at. I'm not sure how much of 35W is reflected in there because it hasn't been in operation for that long. But my understanding is that it is producing an excess over the cost of just collecting the fees. So the change in that section that is in our bill would allow the excess to go just for transportation capital improvements. But no, you're correct that it would not be adequate to actually construct a new MinPass lane.
We could never pay bonds off for the construction or anything.
Ms.
Berezovsky, do you remember, you've been here a while, when those were being constructed, was there ever a hope that there would be more money generated so that there would be more money converted back into transit, or did they kind of expect there would be a small amount?
Madam Chair, I'm probably not the best person to answer that question. I don't know what the projections were in terms of revenues, but I know that, you know, over the years there have been different models that have been examined, like private ownership and so on, and that was abandoned along the way. And I think that under the current system, maybe someone else could, you know, from one of the departments could tell you whether or not the performance is meeting expectations and projections. I don't know.
We have a question over here, but Mr. Shetland, do you want to come up? Senator Higgins was, who had their hand up? Senator Olson?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Oh, Senator Ragnus.
I did, but I think I think I found what I was looking for here. So, I guess I'll ask it anyway since my friend Judd's coming up. Do any of these funds for maintaining and operating the equipment, but do any of these funds go into the parking venues that we have out there? If you're going to park your car and get on the bus and go then on the bus rapid transit, does part of those funds go to that, or Mr. Shetland, or where the funds, I guess we're confused of where the funds are really going.
Great.
I think is what we're talking about.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Judd Shetland. I'm the Government Affairs Director for the Metropolitan Council. Thank you for the opportunity. The 35W revenues, right now we're collecting about $180,000 in additional revenue from that. Of the $360,000 you see in your fiscal report, about $180,000 of that comes from the 35W corridor to the council. Right now, the capital investments in that corridor, most of those were funded through the Urban Partnership Agreement.
Yeah.
And so that's where we were able to construct the MinPass lane, the technology, the park and ride. We built a very large park and ride down in Lakeville and other investments up that corridor. And right now, the way that the agreement sits is that those funds, at $180,000 that are in the bill that are looked to be moved, that is money that we're able to put into the service of transit in the corridor, and it can be transit service, and it can also be for capital improvements. And we are seeing a phenomenal return on that investment as far as the transit usage in that corridor, and we would like to see that remain the way it is. But we're confident we can work with Senator Gimsey on this as well. But right now, the council and MnDOT would be interested in seeing that stay the way it is. And for future MinPass lanes, we're happy with allowing that to go with the way that the bill states right now. But we would just like to see the agreements on the Urban Partnership and 394 remain the way they are.
Madam Chair.
Senator Olson.
Well, Madam Chair, the change, I'm looking at some wording from a summary, but it said 100% would be retained by MnDOT for capital improvements within the corridor. Are there any restrictions on that so that it wouldn't necessarily, because some of the things you were describing were capital improvements within the corridor that was generating the revenue. So could not the same things be accomplished that way, but you'd have to work through MnDOT and you'd rather not?
Mr. Shetland.
Well,
let's see how politics is.
Madam Chair, Senator, we have good friends with we are good friends with MnDOT, and you are correct that the way the bill states right now, it can be used for transportation capital purposes. The only difference is that we could not use those for operating, and right now our transit system is our biggest problem is our operating funds. And, you know, we just lose a little flexibility with those funds. But you are correct that the way the bill reads, it can be used for transportation capital. And I believe that transit capital would be found under the umbrella of transportation capital.
Okay. Thank you. Any other questions about this area? Otherwise, Ms. Boyd?
And Madam Chair, I just briefly want to point out that on your fiscal note on page 5, there is a grid outlining the change to the appropriation distribution of these funds. It's a little confusing, but if there were more questions, members could refer to that as well. If there are none others, I will move to the last piece that hasn't been touched on, which is the next to last line on revenues is an overweight vehicle permit weight class addition. This is a change from 145,001 pounds to 155,000 additional permit capability. So this 5,000 a year would just be extra revenue from the issuance of these permits to the Trunk Highway Fund.
Madam Chair, can I...
Senator Olson.
Can I go back? I don't know if Judd is the one to answer it, but what... You indicated that some of the things that were capital related to the corridor and the MinPass lane and the park and ride and that kind of thing, they can use and fund with that now under the arrangement with Met Council. What does Met Council actually do with it? What percentage is going to the operations of transit versus the capital improvements?
Senator Gibson?
Chair, Senator Olson, I'm getting the indication that all of it is
all
going
of it. That's what I thought. Okay. Thank you.
So are there any other questions for Ms. Boyd about the fiscal note? So, Ms. Boyd, the expenses that aren't covered, that where they don't balance, they're coming basically out of the Trunk Highway Fund, and we actually are seeing some cost savings to the state of very nominal, $31,000 in fiscal year 13, and then only $1,000 in 14, and $3,000 mm-hmm. in the following year. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's right. And the $31,000 in the first year, I believe most things cancel out in the bill. I believe that's mostly that Trunk Highway Fund piece is the permitting system change for the new surcharge on overweight motor vehicles. So,
okay.
Yep.
So are there any other questions, Senator Magnus?
Madam Chair, I would move that we pass Senate File 1072 and send it to the floor.
Okay. We have someone else who wants to testify. Mr. Tennyson?
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Robert Tennyson. I'm an attorney in Minneapolis, and I represent the I-35W Solutions Alliance, which is a joint powers board of Hennepin, Scott, Dakota counties, the cities of Minneapolis, Richfield, Bloomington, Lakeville, Savage, Burnsville, and Elko, Newmarket. I just want to raise an issue. We were a major player in the development of the Urban Partnership Agreement, and a very great interest in development of the bus rapid transit in the 35W corridor and the funding for that. I talked to Senator Gimsey about this, but I just want to raise it as an issue because we need to make sure we have sufficient monies to operate that. The BRT program that was supported by the legislature going back several years in the House was lead was taken by Mary Liz Holberg, Representative Holberg, Representative Hornstein. We had legislation to create the bus rapid transit study. They implemented it. We were part of the Urban Partnership Agreement. We want to see that continued. So thank you.
Well, thank you, Mr. Tennyson. Is there anyone else who wanted to testify? If not, Senator Magnus renews his motion that Senate File 1072 be recommended to pass and sent to the floor. All in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, nay. The motion does prevail. The bill is on its way.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you, Senator Gimsey. And there being no other business before the committee today, the meeting is adjourned.